Live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. The goal to promote God, family, and country, and to protect life, liberty, and property, and to do so using the supreme law of the land, the Constitution of the United States of America. To preserve the nation is our goal. Dr. Scott Bradley's with me, freedomsrisingsun.com, where you can check out his To Preserve the Nation Collegiate Series, his weekly webinars, his incredible articles, and a whole lot more. That's freedomsrisingsun.com. Last hour, we talked about the crazy weather going on. We talked about, hey, Senator Rand Paul, your rights going to vanish? And I think the answer is clearly a resounding yes. Nobody's fighting for your rights, but the very few like me. Of course, we can't get 5 cents to save our bacon if we try. But of course, if you want to promote, you know, perversion, you can get millions and millions and millions of dollars. Or if you're part of the deep state, you got millions and millions and millions. The rest of us are on less and less money every day. Let's bring that, it's the economy, stupid discussion now to the family. My goal is to preach to everybody in the world and let those who want to follow God use us as a source of support. Those who want to promote God, family, and country, those who want to protect life, liberty, and property, those who want to return to their God, and those who want to wait and prepare for the Savior to return. That's the people that I'm looking for. And yes, I got to preach to everybody to make that happen. So I would love the show to get, you know, more visibility and all that kind of stuff. But I'm really seeking to help prepare those people who want the things that I want. I realize that most will turn away in disgust. Most will mock and laugh and prosecute and conduct lawfare and persecute the followers of Christ. We know that's the end game in the reality. So, yes, we must share the message with all to see who will, you know, turn towards the light, so to speak. But at the same time, I have no illusions that the majority are going to hear my voice and make that change. Not a chance. It's not going to happen. We're not even close to it. In fact, Christians are becoming closer and closer to being persecuted and prosecuted in America today for everything under the sun. I digress. The question becomes this for your family, economically speaking. Can you retire for less than $1 million? It's a great question. The answer is not in these states, writes USA Today. And they talk about a bunch of stuff here, but they say the 55 to 64 age group only holds about $185,000 in retirement savings. That's it. Yeah. Among all families, believe it or not, the median retirement balance is $87,000. Is that enough? Not even close, experts say. In a new analysis, quote, the personal finance, they call it this banking race, they identified 16 states where you need at least $1 million to fund 25 years of retirement. So think about it. You're going to be in retirement for like 25 years, which I don't know that I buy, because if you retire at 60, in 25 years, you'll be 85. I don't think most people live to be 85. So, you know, that's, in my opinion, too long of an estimate for retirement in the first place. They say the report considers what are called annual expenses for retired people based on each state's reality check. They say drawing from Labor Department statistics, the local cost of living index, and Social Security data is where they get all their information from. They say first, some good news, the two most popular retirement states, Florida and South Carolina, neither of them are on the $1 million to retire list. Those states, believe it or not, rank 1 and 2 for retirement in the recent reports. They say New Jersey and Washington state, 3rd and 5th on the list, do require a $1 million plus retirement fund to survive. Then they go on and say, here are the $16 million retirement states. Colorado. And then they go on and they explain how much you got to have yearly and how much you got to have overall. So $61,000 a year and $1 million for 25 years of retirement you got to have. Arizona, $63,000. You got to have $1.05 million. New Jersey, $63,700. $1.6 million. Maine, $64,000. $1.6 million. Rhode Island, $64,000. $1.08 million. Connecticut, 65,000, 1.1 million. Oregon, 66,000, 1.12 million. Maryland, 66,000, 1.12 million. Vermont, 66,000, 1.12 million. New Hampshire, 66,000, 1.13 million. Washington. Anyway, it just goes on and on. Alaska, New York, California. Listen to California's. 78,000. You got to have 1.43 million to survive there. I'll go to the last one, Hawaii. $103,000 a year. 2.05 million. Bottom line is it's out of control, doctor. And they say that you can't retire for less than that. Now, in the other states, it's well above, you know, a half a million. You got to have at least almost a million in almost every state. The disparity is great, but not that great. And you look at this, though, and they talk about how much it costs to raise a kid. Hey, it's $220,000 to raise a kid from 0 to 18, not counting college, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I've got eight kids. I never spent 220 grand on each kid at all. I'm maybe at half that at best. And the same thing's true for retirement. I'll never have $1 million for retirement, not even close. And I don't think it'll take me $1 million to retire. In all these states where they say you need $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, whatever, or more, $9,000 a month to live, I barely live on that now, and my kids are leaving and stuff. I don't think I'm going to need near that to retire. Doctor, do you want to respond to this? Because I think they're off the rock crazy and spreading panic around the nation.
Oh, ain't it awful? We're all going to die. Oh,
yeah, that's a lie. That's bogus. That isn't true.
Well, here's the thing. Everything that comes out of everybody's mouth in the authoritative position is desperation. I think this idea of dependency, of looking to government for solutions, they play that angle every single opportunity.
Yeah, and every election cycle, they say, this is the last one if you don't get it right, people. Oh, my gosh. And then we just go on and on, right?
Yeah. But here's the deal. Why do you want to retire?
I don't.
I mean, just stop for a second.
I don't need to retire.
This,
retire from what? Doing what I love?
Who says, come on now. Who says anybody can sit on their butt the rest of their lives and not contribute anything? Now, let's look at the Native Americans and what they did historically. Every single person contributed to their society. If you're an old
hold on, in
guy
different
that,
roles based on life's changes and circumstances, right?
That's the thing, is everybody has to keep this idea that I'm here with a purpose. And if you forget your purpose, you lose your purpose, you never had a purpose, you're going to die early as a worthless slug. And as I look at the Native Americans, if you had a great warrior that had participated in lots of battles, but now he had been wounded so many times, or he was old, or whatever happened, they didn't throw him out. He made their arrows or something like that. He became a craftsman for
or be he became a spiritual leader, a support for those coming back from battle because he's experienced it, and he would spend time with them and give them the encouragement and stability and comfort and relationships that they need to work through the things they're doing. There's a role for everyone in an honest, moral, God-based society.
Well, see, that's the problem, is we're always looking to kind of slide by. And it starts earlier and earlier and earlier nowadays. I mean, you can't find people to work at some kind of grocery store or fast food
place.
Yeah,
you're supposed to just party and play till you're 30, and then you're supposed to work real hard, and then at 65 you're supposed to party and play for the rest of the time, right? That's the lie.
And I don't care what everybody chooses to do. I would rather have some purpose in my life. And if my purpose is just plain bringing souls to Christ from a advice and counsel view, fine. But if I can assist and lift and bless the lives of my fellow man and my family, and I guess those people that think you're going to have to be a bazillionaire to retire are probably going to be really disappointed in their lives. And I think that we need to recalibrate what we're really here for. There's purpose in it. There should be purpose in our lives. And if we don't ever achieve that purpose, I really think...
And shame on us.
I just feel bad. I feel bad for people that
do that. No question.
So I guess this is a bunch of Bravo Sierra, in my opinion.
And a 25-year retirement. Who has a 25-year retirement? That's more than 25% of your life if you live to be 100. If you live to be 70 or 60 or 80, it's even significantly more than that. Again, it all depends on the numbers we're using. But it's over 25% of your life. What? What does retirement mean? Let's talk about it. Skip the break. What does retirement mean? Does it mean just, you know, travel around the country and entertain myself, bread and circus, for 25 years? What does retirement mean to these people? That I don't contribute to society, that I support my parents if they're older than me and my children if they're younger than me because I'm the blessed generation with money? What does this even mean, retirement? I don't even understand what the word means. And let me explain my point on this. If I do talk radio as long as I can, but I love to do talk radio. It's my hobby. It's my passion. I haven't gone broke doing it, but I've spent, listen to this carefully, Dr. Bradley, I have probably spent $2 million on radio over the course of my career. Yes, I've made some money, but at the end of the day, I've spent more than I've made. It's probably my venture in radio has probably cost $2 million. Some of that I've got back because I've had sponsors or people that fund me or donate, and I'm grateful for all their support. But I'm telling you that I've personally spent approximately over the years of my career, almost 30 years in radio, I've literally spent almost $2 million. Now, I guess I lost my retirement, didn't I? But I'll tell you what I've gained. I've gained this idea that we're looking for people to prepare for Christ to come. We're encouraging people to come to God, family, and country. Encouraging people to use the supreme law of the land and get familiar with the founding era and their intentions and desires to stand on the moral and religious side of the culture wars. And I believe that's money well spent, doctor, and it's pennies compared to what others spend and lose literally in a single day.
We have a reason for our existence, okay? And
that's right.
I just cannot justify in my mind this idea that somehow, some way, sitting on our butts, vegetating, is fulfilling our purposes. And you talk about, well, you know, let's look at this outreach we do on a radio program. I personally believe the worth of a soul is great. And I believe that if you save but one soul, I think there'll be some pleasure, I don't know if that's a good word, but some joy, I guess, in being able to associate with that soul, if you will, in the eternities. I don't know exactly how a lot it's going to work. But I think about people, you know, you say, nobody's going to listen. We're all going to... No, I may be naive, but I am absolutely... I'm shocked at people that I run into. I ran into a guy here a while back, and he told me that he started following me back in the George W. Bush... during his administration. He thought George W. Bush walked on water. He thought Bush was the man. And he heard me speak often about some things that I thought George W. Bush
ought to do differently.
Yeah, about
criminal George.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he absolutely thought I was a pariah. I mean, he told me this personally, face to face. He says, you were a nutcase, man. And he says, but you know what? You got me thinking and you got me investigating. You got me doing stuff that I thought I better go find out for myself because you were so passionate about it. And he says, you know what? You were right. He says, it flipped me. And so I believe even the most incorrigible cases can somehow be touched by it. And so,
and it's not up to us to determine who would advance either, right?
No, I mean, and everybody has their path and their choice. And if I can be doing good every moment, I've got a breath in my body, I will try to stand with principles and correct the things that will bring about what I believe is going to lift and elevate our fellow man and follow God.
Amen.
And we've talked about, you know, as long as there's breath in your lungs, you're going to be trying. Now
yes, I am, buddy. That's how it's going to be. So they talk about the rich people are retiring at 50 and 55 years old. The rest are retiring at like 60, 65 these days. I'm going to be 57 this year. I'm not even thinking about or close to retiring in any way, shape, or form because I don't want to retire. Now, I might shift what I spend my time on. I get it. I don't need to make as much money as when I was raising 8 children so I can live on less. And I will choose intentionally to live on less with the purpose of making sure that I'm focused on what matters the most, right? But people are literally retiring. I'm past the age where the guys that made it retire already. But I don't see any value in retirement whatsoever. I'm going to promote God, family, and country and protect life, liberty, and property till the day I die, doctor. That's how it's going to be. And that, to me, is my God-ordained mission. And I'll be allowed to live as long as the Lord wants me to fulfill that mission. When my mission's complete, I'll return to my maker. Until then, I got work to do. And I want to die with my boots on. That's how I want to roll. So I don't know how much money I need if I don't go into retirement. Nobody talks about that. But I know this. I'll need less than I did when I was raising my children. And I know this. I'll need more because of inflation. And I know this, though. I don't need to worry about every bit of that. I need to do what I need to do for God. And then I need to work my very best, and he'll take care of the rest. I don't need to worry about these clowns telling me I got to have $2 million or $1 million or this or that. I don't need to worry about that. What I need to worry about is my day-to-day walk with God. And when I do so, then he will take care of me. And that's what I need to have my efforts in, doing all that I can and knowing that my God will make up the difference if I do what he asks me to do. That's my responsibility. That's my choice. And that's my blessing and opportunity, doctor.
There are many. In fact, it's probably the plethora of those that are in leadership positions that are trying to create an attitude and a mentality of dependency upon us. All
and
of these big numbers,
discouragement.
All of these big numbers are throwing out. I mean, even if you talk about even when you're young, oh, you can't afford another child. Do you know if you bring another child into your family, it's going to cost you this amount of money? And I mean, every single thing that happens has a government solution, though. So if we become dependent, we've folded up on ourselves and we're sitting there wringing our hands the whole time, there'll be some tyrant that's going to show us how they can save us. And so there's so many avenues of hopelessness that they feed to us constantly that people lose their mojo, their desire to live, their power to dwell on earth as a mortal being. You know, they talk about anciently how some of these people lived hundreds of years, you know, and you say, holy cow, what were they doing? They weren't sitting on their butts waiting to die. They had purpose. They had wisdom. They had understanding. And you know, a lot of times young people assume that older folks don't have any of that because it's been bred into them by their humanist schools. And so the wisdom is never passed on. And this idea of what's past is prologue or Patrick Henry's words, I have but one lamp by which my feet are guided, the lamp of experience. I know of no other way of judging the future but by the past. All of this is lost. And value that may be brought, I tell you, Sam, I guess I can't count. I'm old enough to know and have been tracking with a lot of people. They'll die 6 months after they retire. I mean, they just, it's
yeah,
like...
because you're not meant to retire, doctor. You're meant to use every day, every breath on earth to accomplish your mission.
Slide into home plate, man.
Roger,
I mean,
that.
Put this hobbling around from first base to second base.
I want to steal bases when I'm 70, if I can.
My grandpa Bradley, loved baseball. And, you know, he grew up in the era. It was America's pastime, you know. And I did too, in a way. But... he broke his collarbone sliding into second base when he was 65. I mean, it's like, come on, Grandpa, don't you know you can't do that? But he was sliding into second base at age 65, and he broke his collarbone. It's like, well, that's a badge of honor. You know, nowadays people my age have got one foot in the grave, and a lot of that, by the way, I think is attributable to not just the mentality that's fostered, but this jab that's been giving, I mean, I just found out about a guy last night. He died at 58. Just suddenly, boom, gone. And it's like, no, you don't die that old.
You take the jab designed to kill you.
But, I mean, I was totally shocked. This was a young, vibrant guy. I mean, in my opinion, he's a kid. And so we are doing things.
Well, 58's not that old, I'll tell you that.
Well, you're creeping up on it, Samuel.
Hey, I'm going to be 57 this year. It's not that old. Folks, you got to be full of vinegar. You got to be full of passion for what matters. So I'm not saying that I don't want to preach to everybody in the world. I do. I want to share this message with everybody in the world. But I realize that my mission is not to make Sam Bushman a light to the world and practice priestcraft and become popular. That's not my agenda. Okay? My goal is to share the message of God, family, and country with those around the world and teach them the principles of liberty and prosperity and safety, to not seek for power but to seek to pull it down, to not seek for tyranny but to promote liberty and agency. And if I die on that altar, spending my time educating about that, using the five guarantees in the First Amendment to articulate what I believe, a redress of grievance when we've been wronged, freedom to peacefully assemble to make wrongs right, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, you know, all these different things, freedom of religion, I want to advocate for all that every day that I can and teach people around the world, and I hope we can create greater numbers over time. But really, I'm seeking for those who want to prepare, who want to use their years to prepare to meet God when he returns, meet Christ when he returns. Okay, this is a question. I don't know if I'll be here when he returns or not, but I know this, whether he returns to the earth and I welcome him as a mortal, or whether I'd pass away and return to my God, I want to be able to stand before my maker at the judgment of Christ and say, I did all that I could with the time that I had. That's where I want to stand, Doctor.
Well, you know, I fall short in almost every avenue in my life, and I'm hoping I can continue to improve instead of becoming more and more a failure. But if I've done what I can, and I would love to hear from the Savior, well done, thou good and faithful servant, you know. But I guess I'd like to do what I can while I can and quit this concept, this stupidity of folding up the tent and calling it good when you got a lot of good tread left on your tires.
It reminds me of this, Dr. Bradley. It seems to me that we want to give up. We want to believe that somehow, you know, we've done our part or we've done enough, or we need to realize and get on our knees and ask God what he has in our future and what he wants us to spend our time and our talents and our efforts on. It reminds me of the guy who worked really hard for his life, turned 60, retired and just hung out, did nothing, drank beer, just chilled. He got to heaven, got to the gates, and Peter said, let me take you to your wonderful mansion. And he got there, and he got inside, and he looked, and there was beautiful pictures and everything everywhere, and it was exactly like he would make it if he could. It was incredible. And all of a sudden, he felt this drop of water on his head. He's like, what? He looks up, and there's no roof. And he says, Peter, what the heck is happening? This incredible house has no roof. And Peter's like, well, we stopped when you did. And folks, you got to remember this, that we're trying to prepare a people to receive our only king, Doctor. That's what we're doing on this program, right? And that's our goal. That's our quest.
You know, Sam, I would, you know, this is maybe a strange, perverse, not maybe perverse, but at least a different way to look. I would expect there would be no roofs in heaven. And you go, what? What are you talking about? You got to have a closed-in shelter and everything. No.
No, you don't. No.
Look at the divinity. If you are out on a starry night, you're in the most glorious cathedral that there is. No man-made cathedral can possibly hold a candle to that. And so as we travel through this life and we're exposed to God's creations and we see the vastness and the wonder and the majesty of his glory and his work, his handiwork, why would we expect there to be a roof on our heavenly abode? I think we're going to experience, and again, you can say, Bradley, what are you smoking, baby? But it seems to me that in a godly environment, why would I want to be enclosed in four walls and a roof when I can look at the storms?
And that analogy about a roof is just to highlight, folks, that we have got obligations to perform is kind of the point. It's just a little joke to illustrate it. It's kind of like the other guy that's in the flood and the storms are coming and they bring a boat and then a plane and he's up on the pinnacle of the roof waiting for God to save him. And eventually the guy dies in the flood and he comes to God and God says, well, I tried to save you over and over. Right? These analogies are designed to help us think.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
U.S. USA News. I'm Tim Berg. A judge in Atlanta is rejecting a bid to disqualify Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis for prosecuting former President Donald Trump and his co-defendants for trying to overturn Georgia's 2020 presidential election. The judge ruling Willis can remain on the case, but she must cut ties with the deputy she had a romantic relationship with. 10 Americans were rescued in Haiti in an operation led by Florida Republican Congressman Corey Mills after the United States sent military troops to evacuate non-essential personnel from the U.S. Embassy last week. Congressman Mills details what happened during the rescue on Fox Business.
We had put our team together, went into a neighboring country, conducted our con ops, our concept of operations, made contact, total time in, total time out. It was about 40 minutes, give or take.
16 current and former female athletes are suing the NCAA over their policy, which allows men to compete in women's sports. Swimmer Riley Gaines is among those in the lawsuit.
The NCAA, their most basic job is to protect the fairness and safety of competition in collegiate sport. But instead, what myself and countless other female athletes have seen is that the NCAA is discriminating and continues to discriminate against women on the basis of her sex.
The women accuse the organization of violating their Title IX rights by allowing men to compete in women's sports. In a statement, the NCAA says it will continue to promote Title IX, make unprecedented investments in women's sports, and ensure fair competition in all NCAA championships. Cleanup continues after tornadoes struck Indiana and Ohio. Officials saying at least three people died in the tornado in Ohio and others were hurt in a separate tornado in Indiana. Heavy damage was reported in different areas of Ohio after five tornadoes were confirmed in the state. This is USA News.
President Biden recently released a massive $6 trillion budget, the largest budget in U.S. history. And guess who pays the bill? That's right, you, the American taxpayer. American citizens and business owners will be paying more taxes. That's a fact. And if you owe back taxes, they will be coming after you to collect payments. In fact, President Biden also hired thousands more IRS agents to go after you. If you got a letter from the IRS and you know you owe back taxes or you haven't filed in years, don't put your head in the sand. Call us today. We've saved our customers millions of tax dollars. One quick, free phone call will show you how we can reduce your past tax bill and save you thousands, guaranteed, or you pay nothing. Call now.
800-511-6046. 800-511-6046. 800-511-6046. That's 800-511-6046.
Attention collectors and savvy investors. We are excited to announce a momentous evolution in our journey. Introducing Free Water Coin Company, formerly known as Rust Coin and Gift. This rebranding takes us back to the very roots of where it all began, Free Water, Oregon. It's a tribute to the legacy of Al Rust and a celebration of three generations of dedication and excellence in the world of coins and precious gifts. Al, Brian, and Jake Rust, standing strong through 64 years of service. Discover a world of exceptional service at Free Water Coin Company, your premier destination for genuine, honest money and precious gifts. Under Brian's expert guidance, Free Water Coin Company, building on the legacy of Rust Coin and Gift, continues its tradition of trust and excellence. Visit us at our Provo, Utah location. Explore our treasures online at rustgoldandsilver.com or call us at 801-377-1574. Free Water Coin Company, where your future is built one honest coin at a time.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by six corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Yeah, they tell me it's going to cost so much to retire that I'll never get it done, and they want me to just spiral down in panic and fear. I reject that. I don't want to retire, ladies and gentlemen. I'll give you an example of a gentleman. Rest in peace, my dear brother Jack, also known as John F. McManus. He was a man who spent his life fighting for his God, his family, his country, first as a Marine, then as a member of the John Birch Society. He died at 89 years old. The guy worked his whole life, Dr. Bradley. In my opinion, John McManus, or Jack McManus, an American hero standing for what he believed in. And anyway, he just passed away. Rest in peace. Our prayers are with his family. But man, what a life well lived. And he never retired, did he?
No, I have known McManus for many, many years. And we've had many wonderful discussions late into the night. We've, you know, had breakfast together where we could talk over bacon and eggs or whatever. You know, we had a great exchanges, and he was a very eloquent spokesman for the cause of liberty, and he spent his entire life, I believe, trying to preserve the blessings of liberty. Don't believe
that's what I'm going to do, buddy. That's how I'm going to roll. Just like that,
he was
to
never,
the best of my ability.
To my knowledge, a rich man. He didn't have his. He was from Massachusetts.
Who cares?
Well, no, what I'm saying, though, is if you looked on your list of all these, I'll bet you Massachusetts is one of the most expensive ones to retire in. But
it is.
But McManus never did. And he died with his boots on. And I think that, you know, he only lived to be 89. I say, holy cow. They're old saying only the good die young. He died too young, you know. So,
amen to that. Anyway, I bring him up because that's kind of the example that I want to follow. And I spend so much time on this retirement discussion because I don't want you guys to believe that 25% of your life should just be like put out to pasture or whatever. And I don't want you to believe that you can't retire for less than $1 million. Very few of us are ever going to have $1 million in assets that we can rely on at all and stuff like that. So just trust in your God, not in the statistics. Do what you know needs to be done. Don't worry about retirement. Find things that you love to participate in and be part of and do. Volunteer your time if you don't need the money. Find ways to make the money that you need if you've got to. But make sure that you are a contributing citizen to society, to God, to family, country, and you do so lifelong, ladies and gentlemen, because if you party till you're 30, because that's what they kind of expect you to do, and then they expect you to grow up and be an adult and make a bunch of money, pay a bunch of taxes, and then at 65 they expect you to die. They really want to take you out of the game for two-thirds of your life, doctor.
Well, that's, again, I think a satanic, diabolical approach to things. I think we're
not happening to me,
purpose.
Man. I say to God, play me coach, and he does, doctor.
Well, you know, and if it seems like you're not playing, maybe you better find another game. I mean, it's like maybe football's not your sport, but
I'm playing
maybe
for keeps. When Congress says I'm a terrorist, and there's no evidence to that at all. There's every evidence to the contrary. I feel like I'm right where I need to be on the field, sir.
Well, and that's the thing. We shouldn't be sitting there, you know, being just kind of put in, I don't know, kind of a box and locked up. But
that's what they're doing.
Know, let's go out and feel the air around us. Let's participate
Amen.
In the storm.
Now, I want to make one other point because I don't want people to take this wrong. I know Dr. Bradley's been very humble saying, hey, I fall short in just about everything. And I personally feel that same way. On a personal level, I feel like, you know what, I'll never measure up and I'm not good enough. And why am I even a talk show host? There's plenty better at it than I am and all this kind of stuff. I can go there. And I agree with that from a humility point of view. However, I don't take pride or pleasure in myself, but I know this. If I keep the commandments of God and do my very best, God will make more of my life than I can make of myself. And with God, I am successful. I am enough. Whom he calls, he qualifies. And there are many called, but few are chosen. They're only not chosen because they're not willing. It's about agency and about choice and about, okay, I want to be the guy that is called and is chosen because I'm willing. I want to be the guy that says, you know what, by myself, I fall way short. I agree with Dr. Bradley. However, with God, he'll give me what I need to perform the duties that he's given to me. In other words, I will be given the support by God, if I do what I'm asked by God, to fulfill my mission in its entirety with honor. That I'm confident in. And so I don't take confidence in myself as much as I do take confidence in me as a son of God. And he's giving me a task to do, and he'll give me the support to do it. And in that, I have tremendous faith in success, Doctor.
You know, my grandfather, my mother's dad, he was a carpenter. There's other carpenters I respect greatly, too. But Grandpa was one of them. He started as a carpenter when he was in eighth grade. He never went beyond eighth grade. He went out and worked his trade. He's a really magnificent carpenter. And we could talk a lot about his humble life that he lived. I know humble carpenters. I've heard about them before. But he was one of the most well-read men that I think I've known. I didn't really realize that when I was little because, you know, you don't really try and equate those things. But at any rate, when I think I was about 11 years old, he gave me Pilgrim's Progress. This book was written in the 1600s, probably one of the most widely read books, and probably until the middle of the 20th century anyway. I don't know as most Americans have ever even heard of it anymore. I recommend all read it. It's about the journey of life as a Christian. It's interesting the names that are given to those that are participating in it, and the vicissitudes of their life, the challenges, the burdens, the impediments, and everything else like that.
And the opportunities.
Journey. Oh, absolutely. Overcoming these things brings growth. But at any rate, you know, I was very fortunate when I was 11 years old to have Grandpa hand me that book. It was well-worn. In fact, the cover was damaged and everything else like that. I wish they still had it. I don't know what had happened to it. You know, I didn't take care of books then like I should have probably. But there are watershed moments in our lives, and that's what I say. If we will just take opportunities as they come to us, and we will, what shall I do with this one, Lord? It's kind of, you know, you don't have to ask that question every time you get handed a piece of pie. But watch where you're going. Make decisions based upon sound principles. And the journey can be a pretty exciting and beneficial, not only to yourself, but to others. So I guess maybe, if you stop and think about it, maybe some of these people that have been down the road a little further nowadays might give you some counsel. I tell you, I am... The world has been very, very efficient at shutting down the wisdom of the old people. And I'm not saying that all the old people's wisdom is always good, because many have made lots of mistakes through their lives too, and oftentimes they get diverted off the path. But pick a good mentor. Follow a path. And it's a good thing. By the way, your best mentor is the Savior. And if you'll take that path that he's set out, you'll find your way back, and it'll be good. By the way, I've talked about this often on your show, Sam, as this idea of when you get lost, what do? First thing you do is just sit down. You don't run willy-nilly off through the briars and the brambles. You sit down, you look at the back trail. The back trail oftentimes will help you get back to where you need to be. And people oftentimes step off the trail at different times in their life, maybe when they're a teenager or when they get in college or maybe later on in life, they get diverted.
Midlife crisis time, right?
Yeah.
You can get off track there too.
Find your way back, because the origins really are more soundly founded, generally speaking.
I asked my wife if I've had a midlife crisis, and she says not yet.
I don't know. She better be watching more. I hear you're pretty crazy.
Well, I am crazy. I'm crazy about God, family, and country. I'm crazy about what I do. I'm crazy about saving America and protecting America. I'm crazy about carrying out my mission on the earth. I'm crazy about my wife and my children and my grandchildren, and all in good ways crazy, right?
Do you remember the song by Carly Simon, "You're So Vain"?
Yes, I do.
Since she sings the lyrics in there, "You gave away the things you love, and one of them was me." All too often in life, people think, oh, I've got to do something different. I need a newer model wife or something, you know. And you stop and think about it. A lot of times, if you have loved something or someone, there's a reason for that. And you need to sometimes recalibrate a little bit and say, yeah, I loved this once, and here's the reason why. And, yeah, I guess it's worth keeping in
mind. I can't have a younger model wife because she's not my wife. And I can't have a younger model wife because she hasn't been tried in the fire of life with me like my current wife has. So I want the only wife I've got.
You got a history, don't you?
Absolutely. A delightful history. Yeah. Okay, let's skip the break. It's been some downs and ups, and life brings, you know, both of us challenges and everything. But, man, she's tried and true. She's been through it all with me. She knows me like the back of her hand. I can't throw that away. That's golden.
Well, and that's, you know, you stop and think about that. Why hasn't she thrown me away? You know,
that's fair point. And so, I think because she knows my heart, people, and she knows that I humanly fall short, and I'm not much of a man in many ways, but at the same time, my desires are true, and if I trust in God, and hey, he can take not only me and make more of me than I can make of myself, but he can do so for her and for our family, too.
Well, you know, there's a lot of goodness that people don't seem to hang on to very often now. It's interesting, I was on a red-eye flight to New York City one time. I was going back there to consult, and, you know, it's funny. People get on a flight, and they get gregarious, you know, and I was sitting next to a young woman. She was 22 years old, and she wanted to talk, and boy, you know, kind of thing. It would have been nice for me to sleep is the way I thought about it, but, man, she was a nanny, and she was nannying for a very, very prominent family out of New York. Everyone would recognize the name. But I'm going to let you speculate because they'd probably come after me and financially take everything I've got, right? Okay. Anyway, so this family, she just was way too gregarious about the challenges they had. They had everything money could buy. There was not a shred of wealth
of earthly
that they
need.
Could not hold. Well, it was earthly desires, anything. I mean,
sure.
But the fact of the matter was that she was inside the house. She was there with the kids, okay? And at the time, the kids were, I think the boy was 14 that she was taking care of, and a girl probably 8 or 10, I don't know, something in there. It's been long enough, and I guess I didn't write their names in there. I mean, I didn't write down their ages. At any rate, the mom and dad were completely incorrigible. I mean, she told me of affairs that each of them were having, the tennis coach or the masseuse or whatever, the society games they were playing. They almost never crossed paths as husbands and wives. And the boy at age 14, in her opinion, was already a lost cause. He was an immoral alley cat that at age 14, had dabbled in almost everything that every single debauched soul could get into by the time they were in their midlife, and probably would end up, somewhere in the dregs. She still had hope for the little girl because she had not completely dabbled. Anyway, we talked through the night as we flew from Salt Lake to New York, and it's interesting to me that in this power and wealth family, they held both power, wealth, and influence. I don't know if you remember the Dorothy Parker, I think it was, that wrote the thing that the Simon and Garfunkel put out about the banker's son had all there was to do, and he went home and put a bullet through his head. You remember that story? Go back and listen to Simon Garfunkel. It's got a lot of angst in it. But everything was
got a lot of truth in it too.
Yeah, but the fact is, if this family knew what they had, if they knew the good that they could do with the power.
The problem
and
is, when you have that wealth and power, you get into this earthly natural man mode where it's never enough, and that's why they have to have the affairs, because you know what, the woman's not enough. You got to have a prettier, more prosperous, more public, more sexy, whether it's, money and travels. And it's never enough if you go down that road. And that's why I'm steering people to God, family, and country, steering people to, I want to live a very simple, inexpensive life. I don't want all the accoutrements of wealth, and I don't want to have to maintain all these properties and all these items, and I want a very simple life. Not a life of retirement, but a life of, hey, I change my focus and it becomes more godly, more family-oriented, more country-focused every day that I live, to where it becomes more refined, that I become more efficient, more diligent, more dedicated, and more simple about it. I make it sometimes much too complicated. And I think if we simplify things, if we learn to live on less, and that's really kind of one of the things, I think you should never retire. And I think you should learn to live on less money all the time. I remember I had a cousin that lived in Mexico, and I remember that they didn't have very much money. And I remember calling her one time, and I'm like, hey, I hear the economy is really horrible down there. And are you guys suffering? And she goes, we don't have any money, and we never know the difference. Doesn't matter what the economy is doing. We live on very little, and that's all we've got, and we're happy. And I thought about that. This was in my younger years, when it's like you start your career and you want to make money, and I'm going, what? What is happening with that? And she kind of articulated that, you know what, if you live on less, if you live on a lot of the basics, if you have a simple life, you're insulated from 90% of this, quote, economic swing, inflation, not 100%, but everything. If you grow a lot of your own food, inflation doesn't hit your food budget as much, right? So there's so much we can do, is the point, doctor. There's so much we can spend our time on, right?
A couple of real quick things. One of them's kind of anecdotal funny, and the other one's a true story out of my mother's life. You know why the Amish didn't have such an epidemic of COVID? And it was because they didn't watch TV. Okay, so the influence of the media in our lives oftentimes really puts a spin on things. And I really truly believe that the festering panic that happened during that COVID con was pretty much media generated. Okay, so that's one little funny. We don't engage in the things of the world so much. The other one was something from my mom's life. She was young during the Depression, and her dad, as I mentioned earlier, was a carpenter. He was a humble carpenter. He was a good man, quiet, but, you know, stable and, you know, decisive and went forward and everything. They lived on a little 10-acre plot of ground. It was a little kind of, it wasn't really what they made their living off of, but it was a subsistence farm. They had some chickens and some pigs and a cow, and they grew their garden and had some fruit trees, stuff like that. My mom told the story before she died about 1 year during the Depression, there was a total of $5 in their family. $5. You think about starting January with $5. What are you going to do? How long are you going to go? Most people can't get their latte for that nowadays, you know. But she said, I didn't know we were poor. She said, we always had plenty to eat. And, you know, every Sunday, Grandpa'd go out in the chicken coop, and he'd bring out two chickens that were ready to be baked, you know. Grandma would go down in the root cellar and pick out the potatoes and the canned goods. You know, she'd make a pie or maybe a rhubarb or something like that, apple or whatever stuff she'd canned. She'd have vegetables and stuff. She said, we had plenty to eat. And you know, Grandpa, his home was paid for the day he moved in, because he built it with his own hands. And you know, the simplicity of that is something that very few people feel today. But Mom says, I didn't know we were poor. They had sufficient for their needs. And she had an idyllic childhood. I mean, that's the way she told it, was that there was a lot of goodness in her childhood. And this simpler way of life that we've all strayed from, the keeping up with the Joneses or whomever, you know, it's a really,
yeah, you
really...
You got to not have two cars. You got to not go too many places. You got to not just be getting and going and spending and doing. And you got to take a step back and say, hey, what should my days be full of? Where should I spend my time? How can I live effectively and expensively? There's a lot to this. And part of this show is designed to help people do that. I want people to take courage from these headlines. So when they say it takes, you know, a million plus to retire, not in my house and not on my watch, it doesn't. Not even close. Not even close. Okay, I've raised 8 kids, and I guarantee I didn't have 220 grand for every one of them. I don't have that kind of money. Okay? It isn't true. You can raise your kids way less expensively. You can, you know, raise your family and live with your wife and your spouse. And, you know, you can do staycations. You can have simple pleasures that don't cost a lot of money, a little hike together, a walk, a picnic. There's so many things that you can do, even watch movies. There's so many things, and we've got to focus on all that. But people are now asking, hey, is AI the mark of the beast? I say the answer is a resounding no. I don't believe that it is. What do you say, doctor?
Well, we're running out of time, and I'd probably have plenty to say about that. But I believe the mark of the beast is going to be a conscious decision that people make. And AI is not a conscious decision that I have made, and I don't have to follow AI, and I don't have to give it credence and credibility, and I don't have to feel that it is more intelligent than God. Or I don't, you know, there's all sorts of spins you can put on this. But let me just go back to 1787. August 16th, if I recall correctly. Strange, isn't it? They were debating fiat money, paper money, printed money, unbacked money in the Constitution Convention. Criminal money, absolutely. The people need to understand this was discussed up front. And the founders had experience in this, and that it was suggested in this debate on the 16th of August that they allow the government to print unbacked paper money. And one of the delegates, I think he was from Delaware, he said it would be as alarming as the mark of the beast in Revelation. Okay, so the founding fathers felt like making a conscious decision to pollute your economic system would allow that controlling factor, you know, because remember, if you go back and read the book of Revelation, it talks about you would not be able to buy nor sell without this mark, okay? And that would be something that would be damning, okay? So maybe AI will control, maybe somebody will give me a social score that's different than I would like and I won't be able to purchase. I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, I think that when you accept the mark of the beast, this is a personal opinion and it doesn't mean everybody has to agree with me, but I believe that God judges us about what's in our hearts. Man does a very poor job of judging oftentimes, but God That's perfectly right. judges. And so if I have consciously determined in my heart to accept this egregious acceptance of the beast and his power and his glory and his ascendancy over God and all this kind of stuff, if I've made that decision in my heart, I believe that's going to go pretty rough on me. But I don't believe that some of these nonsensical things that are out there that people are attributing to the mark of the beast are, I mean, you know, maybe.
They might become tools of the beast to force the mark, but it's not the mark itself.
And you think about for a second, we made an advancement. Well, let's say a kind of a regression is how I would put it. Over the last 4 years, you could not buy nor sell in many instances without accepting the jab. And I think it was if it wasn't the actual thing itself, it was an advancement towards that thing. And I think we've got to be very careful how we live our lives, because we get to the point where we say, oh, by golly, I took the jab so I could go out on the town on the evening. It's something
that's the point, ladies and gentlemen. You've got to weigh your choices, your agency, by the guidelines God provides, by the guidelines of the God-ordained traditional family. Okay, these are the gauges by which we can cling to for stability and safety and understanding. And we've got to make wise choices. I don't believe the mark of the beast will be something beyond my control. I believe it'll be a choice that I have to make, either for or against, not something that's foisted on me that I don't have control over and I'm part of without even knowing or realizing it. I don't believe that'll be the case either. Dr. Bradley, sadly, we're flat out of time. 2 hours of great talk. Take faith and courage out of this broadcast. Don't take discouragement. Understand that there are so many good things and so many solutions. They're just not talked about in the mainstream. That's the problem. They want you to be disconnected and discouraged, and that's Satan's plan. I'm energized. I believe in God Almighty, and He loves me, and He loves you, and He knows that we can have a wonderful life and a wonderful eternal future if we but make choices that facilitate that opportunity God's given us. I testify Christ lives, and He loves us. And to follow the Prince of Peace is the answer. Dr. Bradley, thank you so much. FreedomsRisingSun.com.